Did you know that olive oil is at its peak of flavor and nutrition right after it's fresh pressed at harvest time? That's why my favorite olive oil is delivered to me direct from the latest harvest, thanks to the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and as a listener of Intelligent Medicine, you can try a bottle of their finest artisanal olive oil, normally $39, for just $1, with no obligation to buy anything else. I've been enjoying these harvest fresh olive oils for years. They are far and away the brightest, most lively, and flavorful olive oils I've ever tasted. Their antioxidants and polyphenols are off the charts because they're fresh from the harvest. They make store-bought olive oils taste dull and flat by comparison. Taste for yourself. Check out this generous trial offer and get your $39 bottle for a buck with no obligation to buy anything else. Visit myfavoriteoliveoil.com. In my case, it truly is. Myfavoriteoliveoil.com. Myfavoriteoliveoil.com. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. And, you know, I got to say that I've been a physician for nearly 35 years. And I've written literally thousands and thousands of prescriptions, but I don't pay a lot of attention to where the drugs come from. I know what the drugs are capable of doing. I know their pros and cons. But I don't really care that much whether patients get brand name medications or generics. My presumption, you know, it's a naive presumption, is that the generics are equivalent. They're just cheaper, and my patients can thereby save money. But this new book, Bottle of Lies, The Inside Story of the Generic Drug Boom, has me very concerned. We're talking to the author, Catherine Eban, and some shocking statistics. Nearly 90% of the drug supply in the United States is generic. I didn't know that. 40% of those generics originate in India, which is the Wild West of drug manufacture, according to this book. It's exhaustively researched. It involves interviews with literally hundreds of individuals who are in the know about this business. And the other thing, so let's say you don't get a generic. Let's say you get a brand name. Instead of getting metformin, you get brand glucophage. It's more expensive. It may cost you a few hundred dollars instead of, $20 or $30. But 80% of the active ingredients in all drugs, whether brand name or generic, as well as virtually all antibiotics taken in the U.S., are made overseas under conditions that, well, you know, are very, let me put it charitably, variable. So, Catherine, what are some of the drugs that have caused problems? One of them in particular sticks in my mind. It's the immunosuppressive medication for patients who are recipients of organ transplants, tacrolimus.
Yeah. So the book follows these two cardiologists from the Cleveland Clinic, one of whom in particular, Dr. Harry Lever, began to realize that, you know, when his patients got switched from a brand name to certain generics, or they got switched from one effective generic to another generic, that suddenly patients he'd stabilized began to have all kinds of symptoms, irregular heart rhythms. But the most troubling, I think, was the story of heart transplant patients at the Cleveland Clinic. The very vigilant pharmacist there began to get worried about a particular generic immunosuppressant, tacrolimus, but manufactured by an Indian company, Dr. Reddy's. That company was having a lot of recalls. The pharmacists felt uneasy, so they basically said, this is going on the Cleveland Clinic's blacklist. We're not buying this drug. We're not providing it to patients. But suddenly they realized, well, you know, patients leave the hospital. They go to a CVS, for example.
Yeah, fill a prescription.
They're getting that drug.
Mm-hmm.
And they had several patients who came back with symptoms of organ rejection after getting switched to that drug.
Mm-hmm.
One of them died.
And by the way, it's easy to blame the patient. You know, it's like, oh, you didn't take your medications, or, you know, bad stuff happens sometimes. Yeah, it's natural to go through a process of rejection. It must have taken a while to, and some detective work to uncover that it was the medication was ineffective or adulterated.
Yeah, I mean, so they were, you know, putting together these pieces, but really the clue was that these were patients who had been stable for a long time. They had been fine. Mm-hmm. They were doing well on a brand name tacrolimus, and then they got switched to this particular generic. And what was interesting is that I was able to get some of the adverse event records that had been filed with the FDA for this particular drug, and found another health system, Loma Linda in California, that had submitted a similar complaint to the FDA, that when their transplant patients went on this generic, they were showing symptoms of organ rejection. You know, but one really troubling part of this is that the FDA has really not been aggressive at responding to that. And there are instances where they have literally sat on patient complaints for years. You know, significant evidence that the drugs are not bioequivalent. They've sworn they are bioequivalents. And yet, when they finally, under pressure, do tests, they found, lo and behold, these drugs are not bioequivalent. That happened in the case of a generic Wellbutrin.
Oh, and by the way, Wellbutrin is notorious for causing these types of problems. And I can tell you that from my patients, many of them complain when they're switched from brand Wellbutrin to generic Wellbutrin. They say, it just doesn't do the trick for me. And sometimes I wonder, you know, oh, is it psychological? Because after all, this is an antidepressant medication. Maybe these patients are a little bit wild and crazy, and they're, you know, there's a placebo effect, but there's something to it.
Well, there is something to it. And, you know, one of the issues here is with time-release drugs.
Yes, that's important. You explain that. That's fascinating.
Yeah, which is, you know, a lot of people think, oh, a drug goes off patent, and then the brand company hands over their formula to the generic company, mm-hmm. and they just make the identical drug at a lower cost. But it really doesn't work like that at all. And, in fact, they surround their drug, the brand name companies, with a variety of patents. And one of the things they patent specifically is the time-release mechanism. Mm-hmm. So the generic companies have to reverse-engineer all of this and sort of separately come up with a time-release mechanism. But, you know, they are not playing by the rules. Mm-hmm. They're often these mechanisms that they come up with are ineffective.
Right.
The drugs don't dissolve correctly. And in a number of cases I've exposed, they have concealed this from the FDA.
Yep. And that's a very important point. Let's reiterate that, because you may have a chemically identical active agent in a generic, in, say, a time-release blood pressure medication, or a time-release antidepressant, or a time-release diabetes medication. But it's very important that you kind of regulate how rapidly the medication's deployed within the body. And if it all, you know, if it goes poof, you know, all in one big shot, you know, when you take the pill, or alternatively, if it doesn't get released properly, it basically comes out in the toilet, that ain't good.
Right. Absolutely. So, you know, what some of the FDA investigators who have gone into these plants are seeing is that the underlying tests, which are being concealed from the FDA, shows that in many cases, the dissolution of these drugs is basically failing, and that there have been test results that have been concealed from the FDA, and then the actual testing that's being shown is manipulated.
You know, Catherine, this is going to get even more complicated, because there's a category of drugs now, monoclonal antibodies and immunomodulators that are very, very expensive. And they're going to go off patent. And there's a big debate about, you know, how do you replicate those medications? They came up with a new word for it. They're called biosimilars.
Yeah.
But will biosimilars wreak havoc, because they're similar? But it sounds like the potential for going awry is much greater with these complex monoclonal antibodies than with a simple chemical formula that you, you know, make in a test tube with, you know, old-fashioned organic chemistry.
Absolutely. And, you know, and a lot of the people I talk to are extremely concerned about this, which is if these companies are playing fast and loose with just making a simple, you know, small molecule drug, how are they going to make these biosimilars?
We're talking Humira, Remicade, you know, some of these tried and true, you know, powerful anti-arthritis medications, ulcerative colitis medications, that kind of thing. And now cancer drugs like Keytruda, you know, these are a whole new generation of drugs. They cost tens and tens of thousands of dollars a year. And we're going to obviously, you know, there's going to be a race to the bottom to save costs.
Absolutely. You know, so the question really is, I mean, you know, how are we going to resolve this problem of quality and cost? It is, and it's just nobody has really put forward an answer except to say, there's a lot of reasons why we should be making our own drugs at this point.
Mm-hmm. So reclaim our primacy, as the world's leading producer of medications. I mean, it used to be, U.S., Switzerland was a big producer, France. I think the standards in those countries are pretty rigorous. But then, you know, when we start going to less regulated countries, with very cheap labor, under conditions that are, you know, hard really to follow, we may be unleashing havoc. So do you see an action plan in that direction? Because actually the opposite's happening. The administration recently floated a plan to make offshore drugs more accessible to Americans as a way of reducing costs in this country. And I said, ooh, that sounds good. I mean, initially that's tempting.
Well, you know, that has been the sort of go-to answer for people who are not really knowing how to solve this problem, which is to look overseas. And that's how we got into this quagmire, you know, is to basically say, the FDA's got this, they can protect us, let's move everything offshore where it's cheaper, it's lower cost. You see, but all of that is really stemming from this underlying refusal to regulate drug prices. And it is forcing us into the arms of these low-cost providers.
Okay.
So, you know, what is an answer to this? There's been some interesting things happening. And one of them, there's a company called Civica RX, which is basically aiming to bring manufacturing back to the U.S. under a non-profit model.
Hmm.
And that might be a way forward. That could provide a model for how to do high quality.
It's like a co-op marketplace for drugs, in effect.
Exactly. And in fact, Civica RX, what they've done is a number of health systems have pooled together to commission this company to manufacture drugs in shortage. The generic drugs that are in shortage.
These so-called orphan drugs and actually not even orphan drugs, because there was recently a shortage of digoxin, you know, like one of the most fundamental cardiological drugs.
That's just the
marketplace creates these weird shortages of essential drugs. Insulin is another example lately.
You know, part of the problem is that actually, and this will sound counterintuitive, prices are dropping too low, which is, you know, if you have 10 Indian companies that get into the marketplace to make a generic and the price just drops through the floor, what is the incentive for quality?
Yeah, exactly. They will absolutely capture the marketplace, as our dependency on China has captured the marketplace for a lot of consumer goods, makes it impossible for American workers to, you know, economically make the stuff for us anymore. They've literally gutted many American industries as a result, and pharmaceutical industry,
absolutely,
I think, is an example of that.
Right.
So, what are consumers to do? I mean, should our patients demand brand name medications, or are there certain instances where maybe you should be selective? Maybe it doesn't matter so much with some. They're pretty well vetted. There's a pretty good safety record. Or is it imperative to demand brand name medications always?
Well, you know, as you can imagine, since the book came out, I've just been flooded with that kind of question from consumers. What can they do? What can they do to make sure that their drugs are safe and effective? And what can they do to figure out where their drugs are being made, which is a super tough one. So I actually put together a guide to investigating your own drugs, which is on my website, which is KatherineEban.com.
Okay, let's spell Eban is E-B-A-N. It's phonetic. Catherine with a K.
Yep.
Okay.
So, but basically what I've said is, you know, if you are a patient who is taking a drug day in and day out, it is really a good idea to get to know who is making that drug. Does the drug seem effective? Is it working? And if so, do you want to stay on it? So to stay on it, you have to know who's making it, because then you have to request that same manufacturer from your pharmacy so you don't get switched.
Right, which can happen. That's the other thing is, you know, you're filling a prescription day in and day out, and the pharmacy may source it from a different manufacturer. The very self-same drug at the same dose comes from somewhere else all of a sudden, and it may be different.
That's right. And especially for patients who are taking what are called narrow therapeutic index drugs, where precise dosing is so important.
Blood thinners, antidepressants, cardiovascular medications, blood pressure stuff, you know, all that.
Right, and that can really be devastating, right? Because even if that drug meets the FDA's standards, the FDA permits a range of 80% of the brand name absorption into the blood on the low end and 125 on the high end.
That's a lot of wobble.
So a lot of wobble, so patients may be really affected by that swing. So I'm recommending that they know who makes their drugs, that if they're having problems, they should do some research about the track record of that manufacturing company. You know, have they gotten warning letters? What kind of warning letters? For data fraud, for all kinds of things, you know, to check that out. And to also find out what other companies make your drug.
It's a little, you know, this is a wonderful initiative, Catherine, but it's a little scary that an investigative journalist with a few resources at your disposal has to be the arbiter of which drugs are safe in this country. Why isn't this something that's undertaken by our government in an effort to safeguard our consumers?
Absolutely. I mean, the FDA, in my opinion, should be out there at drugstores all the time doing random testing. And there is no surveillance testing that the FDA does on a regular basis. You know, they will occasionally pull drugs if they get a ton of complaints, but there really is no ongoing testing. And so the question is, what's preventing companies from submitting their best drugs to get approval and then switching it to secretly switching out good ingredients for less expensive, you know, poor ones.
Exactly.
For changing up the manufacturing, none of which they're supposed to do, but if nobody's testing the drugs, that can happen.
Have you been called upon to testify in Congress, or have any of the innumerable presidential candidates that are vying for nomination expressed one whit of interest in some of these ideas?
Well, actually, I have. So I have been contacted by several congressional committees.
Great.
They are looking into this. The House Energy and Commerce Committee has requested information from the FDA, partly on the basis of my reporting. And I've been in discussion with, you know, various commissions. I testified before the U.S.-China Commission. They're doing testimony on, you know, our dependence on Chinese.
Our whole relationship, I think, needs to be investigated. And this is one aspect of a kind of a perverse relationship that we have, a relationship of dependency that, we, from time to time, we need to kick the tires and examine it.
Right. So though I don't know where that is, those inquiries are going to go, at least they are underway.
Okay. So that's hopeful. Now, the FDA, And by the way, I'm no great fan of the FDA because I think, you know, I'm involved with the supplement industry. I'm, you know, someone who's a proponent of nutritional supplements. We can even go into issues of the supplement supply chain on another day, but that's not what your book was about. There's some problems there too, because many of those products and many of those those ingredients come from offshore. The FDA, although sometimes they don't get it about supplements, they are woefully undermanned, and that's sexist, you know, undermanned, underwomaned. They have, I think in your book you report they have 13,000 employees. Do I have that right for their entire?
Something like that. They do have thousands of employees, but really they only have, you know, a handful of people who are in their overseas offices.
Mm-hmm.
They have a small cadre of inspectors that travel to do foreign inspections. So there is no way that they are staffed for this.
Mm-hmm. And also, you know, I would say, I imagine that there's some issues around, you know, freedom of movement and freedom of access, especially in China, you know, because it's kind of hard to be a free-range investigator in a country as locked down as China.
Well, that's absolutely true. But on the other hand, you know, our president likes to talk about being tough on China.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, we haven't said to China, hey, you want to sell your drugs into our market? We get to come and inspect your plants when we want.
Mm-hmm.
So that discussion has never happened.
And I think it's within the China's capability to undertake very careful inspections. I'm pretty sure that, you know, when they create aircraft parts for supersonic jet fighters, that their standards are pretty exacting. But when it comes to an export market for countries like the United States, who maybe they don't hold in the highest regard, you know, let people do what they want in terms of it.
I would really say that what my book fundamentally exposes is that the manufacturing standards at the majority of these overseas plants is whatever they can get away with. So whatever the regulation, and the vigilance of the regulators permits, you know, and to the extent that we are doing pre-announced inspections and simply reviewing data without testing, it's permitting substandard drug products into our country.
Yeah, and that is fundamentally wrong. And I think your book has really done to the generic drug industry a little bit what Upton Sinclair did back, I guess it was around 1910, to the meatpacking industry. You're really blowing the lid off an operation that really needs a lot more regulation and scrutiny. And it's important and vital because the vast majority of Americans are taking at least one, if not many, of these medications, and we really need to depend on our medication supply. It's vital. We need to bring costs down, but not at the expense of our nation's health, and it's really under attack.
Yeah, I think, you know, if you asked a lot of Americans, would you rather pay $4 for a refill at Walmart for drugs coming from an Indian plant where regulation was not very good? Or would you like to pay $10 for that same refill for a drug made in America? I think I know what the answer would be.
But the problem, Catherine, is transparency. People don't even know that there's a choice, and their choice is often forced by insurance company decisions like, you know, you're going to get a generic, and
that's absolutely
that's
right.
What we'll pay for. And you know, go ahead.
It's remarkable because patients don't know and don't really have any way to know where their drugs are made. Whereas they know where their cereal is made, their shirts, the label says where they're made, but there's no labeling on the drug product.
Right, and with a lot of products, I mean, we have an opportunity to opt for quality. You know, we can go. We can get, U.S. chuck beef to make our hamburger, or we can get, prime, grass-fed organic beef to make our hamburger. It's going to cost a lot more, but, you know, you vote with your consumer dollars. Here, you don't even know. There's no transparency.
That's
There's no
right.
way of knowing what you're getting. So, Well, it's a fascinating book. I really appreciate you coming on. All the best to you. And mention your website again. It's KatherineEban.com.
That's right.
Okay, lots more information and resources there to help you make more informed choices about your drug sources. Important story, Bottle of Lies, the inside story of the generic drug boom. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Hi, this is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. For decades, I've been preaching about the importance of a regimen of basic supplements that everyone should consider part of their daily health routine. So I came up with an easy way for you to get the exact combination of targeted supplements you need to help you follow the intelligent medicine lifestyle. The very same supplements I take myself and prescribe for my patients. Just go to DearHoffmanStore.com and check out my Intelligent Medicine Starter Kit. It's a short list of the basic supplements that I recommend as a starting point for those looking to take control of their health. They're the essential elements of a basic program that everyone could benefit from. And for a limited time, you'll get free shipping on all of your store orders. For more details, just go to DearHoffmanStore.com. That's DearHoffmanStore.com.